Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this week I'm getting the long-lost Lachie Moore back on the podcast. So you recall last time that Lachie was on the podcast, it was at the point where we were on the cusp of appointing the blessed Brendan as manager, and it was likely to be Brendan, possibly Davey Moyes, but of course the press were telling us that we couldn't get either of those and we'd be going for someone like Alan Stubbs. And you might also recall that Lachie was a bit of a Eurosceptic on the old Brendan front. He had no European experience and he'd never won anything. So I thought with the winter break, it was an appropriate time to revisit Lachie, get his opinion on Brendan, how he'd been faring, and to see whether that scepticism still reigned. I'll let you into a secret, it doesn't. Anyway, enough of me. We've got some games coming up, so Lachie and I review the period under Brendan, put a check on his scepticism, talk about the future, talk about the next four games, which are going to set us on the way to the treble. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lachie Moore. So Lachie, how are you? Did you have a good festive period?
We did, yes. We had four of our offspring home and now they've all gone. So we have the house to ourselves.
Now, do we need them to come back when Brexit happens?
Well, to be honest, there's a wee bit of panic. As you know, two of them were working in Europe.
Uh-huh.
And they're really seriously concerned about their future. Because we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, does anybody know? And the Prime Minister doesn't seem to.
I've got a clue.
No. So last time we spoke was at the appointment of Brendan Rodgers.
Just before the appointment.
Was it the, before the appointment of Brendan Rodgers? Was it when it was still possibly Rodgers or Moyes?
Yes, it was.
Right, okay. And obviously, and this drew some comment on Twitter, and if people want to comment again, it's at Lachie Moore 1 if you want to hurl the abuse, or you can email in podcasts@CelticUnderground.net. You were a Brendan sceptic.
Yes.
You were a, what is he, you know, what have, apart from almost taking Liverpool to the title and getting Swansea out of the Championship, what has Brendan ever achieved? So,
what have the Romans ever done to us?
Correct. Are you still a Brendan sceptic?
Not entirely.
Not entirely? Not entirely. We haven't lost a game.
Well, we did lose some games.
We haven't lost a game domestically.
Domestically,
we've dropped 2 points domestically entirely. Is that what you're unhappy with? That's not 100%.
Well, I mean, I have to admit that things seem to be going swimmingly at the moment. I was interested to see what would happen over this winter break when he actually did have time to work with the players, because I do accept that he had no time at the beginning of the season. He was still recruiting players. He didn't know which players could do a job for him. There are now players that look like near enough automatic picks for the team that weren't even getting a game at the beginning of the season. So he had a lot to take on. I was really impressed, and I think I wrote about it maybe it was just in a private message sent down to me, of the people he brought in. You know, I can't remember their names, the assistant manager and the other guy. Chris Davis and who was the other chap? Anyway, they were from Loughborough, or at least they were graduates of Loughborough.
Yes.
They were sports scientist guys and intelligent people. They weren't the good old boys. And that impressed me. I know they had a relationship with him from the past, but it wasn't like your normal Scottish manager coming in and bringing in his two pals that played with him. These guys actually seemed to have some gravitas, and they spoke well when they were interviewed at the beginning about what their aspirations were for the club. So I think they've done very well so far. I'll be interested to see if they do move up a gear for the second half of the season. I thought there were signs in the European title. I thought it was interesting that two of the draws that they got in Europe were away from home. So that was promising, because in the past, the defending's been fairly chaotic away from home.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure that they are a good, that they defend well. I think they have good players in defence, but I'm not sure that they're the finished article when it comes to being a defensive unit. Because I still see lots of individual errors. I still see poor decisions being made by players that are actually good players. And I think that comes from coaching and working together as a group. And hopefully this winter break will have ironed out some of those problems. So I'm optimistic.
You're optimistic. Well, if I take you through, because just as you were speaking there, I remember nothing about this game at all. Absolutely nothing about this game. Our second last game of the season, our last away game last season, was a defeat at St Johnstone.
Mm-hmm.
The team was Logan Bailly in goals, mm-hmm. Sadie Yanko at right back, who was replaced by Ralston, mm-hmm. Ambrose and Sviachenko were the two centre-halves, with Izaguirre at left back. Johansson played in the middle and was subbed by Beaton. He played with McGregor and Scott Allen, who was replaced by Rogic. And the wide players were Roberts and Christie, with Griffiths up front.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that team. And Forrest was on the bench and was struggling to get a game. Armstrong was on the bench. Kieran Tierney was on the bench on that game. And our first choice 11 now, with Tierney fit, would be Gordon, Lustig, Sviachenko, Simonovic, Tierney, Brown, Armstrong — I'll not mention Aboui just now — Brown, Armstrong, Rogic, Forrest, Sinclair, Dembele.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit of a change.
Mm-hmm.
So what have your thoughts been about the transformation of the team under Brendan Rodgers? The way that they play. What are your thoughts on the way they play?
Well, I think they play in a much more fluid manner. The midfield has... Compared to that midfield who was playing at the end of the season, they're now much more dominant than they were. Brown wasn't playing because of his injury, and he has transformed himself this season to be a really effective midfield player again. And Armstrong obviously is beginning to show the type of abilities that we signed them for. But one of the things that does niggle me a wee bit about what's transpired is the way that Griffiths seems to have become not marginalised, but clearly the second choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that Dembele has terrific ability, but I don't think in your normal running of mill league games he always shows it. I sometimes think his attitude's a wee bit of, I'm slightly above this. Whereas I think Griffiths gives you everything he's got every week. So there are games where I would play Griffiths before Dembele. Now, I was listening to another podcast that you sometimes partake in.
And the second best Celtic podcast.
Yes, yes. From our friends in America. But, you know, it was almost as if there was no question about Dembele being the first choice player. And perhaps in time he will be a superstar. We will see. But I still think Griffiths has a lot to offer the Celtic team. And I think that Griffiths is a player who wants to play for the Celtic team. Whereas Moussa, for all his ability and his good stuff just now, is transient. So I wouldn't sicken Griffiths by leaving him out of the team all the time. I would mix and match them. This idea that, well, you've got the jersey, you hold the jersey, I don't think, I wouldn't go with that. Either of them are good enough to play in the Scottish League.
But to be fair, through December, it was almost one in, one out.
Yeah. But my thoughts were that when Griffiths was left out, he didn't necessarily deserve to be left out. Whereas there were games when Moussa didn't look to me as if he was too well. The big games, he seemed fully committed.
I think that the thoughts in at the club might be that Dembele's two-footed and Griffiths isn't. As two-footed. And Dembele links play up better than Griffiths does.
I would argue with that. I've watched a lot of the games, and I think Griffiths' ability to control the ball and move on quickly is underrated. He may not be as physically imposing as Dembele, but Dembele's touch is not always messy-like. You know, it's not always as secure as people would have you believe. The ball doesn't always stick to Dembele. They both get shortcomings in that department. Dembele has a tremendous physique, and when he applies himself, he terrorises defenders. But I'm not sure he always applies himself. It's just a wee thing. I just think Griffiths is a Celtic player for a long time to come, unless he does something completely stupid. And we'll see about that.
So if we go through the team as a sort of half-year review, so you were not 100% convinced about Brendan. He comes in, and one of the first bits of chat straight away was whether he would stick with Gordon. So he did for a few games, and then Gordon went out and DeVries came in. So what's your thoughts on what's happened around Craig Gordon?
There's certainly been an improvement in the way that he uses the ball with his feet. But I also think there's been an improvement in his general attitude. I think there was a wee while I think he was the automatic first choice, and he had some really shaky games last season, some really dodgy performances, and that was even into the end of the previous season, where he made some very poor decisions coming out and emptying guys and getting himself sent off and cup ties and stuff like that. But I think his overall game has been raised. Perhaps because, although I thought Logan Bailly was a decent goalkeeper when he played for us, the odd game we played. If Gordon was out and he came in, I don't remember him selling any games.
But we've now, the odd thing is, we've now got four goalkeepers who are considered part of the first team squad.
Well, they took that young boy with them to Dubai.
I know.
And they're raving about him as if he's the coming man.
I don't know, because I've never seen enough of him. I don't think, put it this way, to have been hanging around the first team squad for three, four years now, to be 20, 21 years of age, and to be the fourth choice goalkeeper, I don't think Fasan's got a future at Celtic.
Who was the American goalkeeper that did the same?
I was speaking about him just this week.
Because I saw him down here one time playing against Queen of the South.
Dominic Chervey.
He was brilliant against Queen of the South.
Well, Dominic Chervey now doesn't play football.
No, I thought that.
And if you look at him, I think he had 6 years as a professional footballer and played something like 10 games of football.
Yeah, that's right.
and they were on loan at Morton. So I found it odd actually that he didn't go somewhere, a bit like the thing that Mark Cooper was talking about in our last podcast about the benefit of if we were to sell Dembele to Liverpool for whatever. Once you've been at Liverpool, someone like Crystal Palace will, no matter how poor you are, someone like Crystal Palace will still come in for you. And you'd have thought with Dominic Shervey having been at Celtic, somebody in a tier below Celtic would have come in for him.
I think when he'd been home to America, he's not an American club would have picked him up.
Yep. But nothing, he doesn't play football at all now, which is all very odd. And Leo Fassan's, as I say, patently our fourth choice goalkeeper behind, because we've got De Vries is number two. And then, well, I don't know actually, between Baye and Fassan, which one's three and which one's four. But I don't know which one would be three and which one would be four out of those two.
It intrigues me. We were talking, Anthony and my son and I were talking about it over Christmas, about the number of former Celtic goalkeepers who are playing at a good level of football and yet they never get a game for the Celtic. There's a few in the Scottish League.
But goalkeeper is a difficult position to break into.
The boy who played for Northern Ireland in the Euros was a former Celtic goalkeeper.
Yeah, Michael McGovern, yeah.
Played. Scott Fox. He's another one.
Yep. But there was a period when there was the league was full of Rangers goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Who were the same. We had one of them. Mm-hmm. And there was Brown, who was also, was he at Motherwell as well, or Hibs? Yeah, there was a different Brown went to Hibs as well.
Yeah.
And Inverness, so these things can happen because it's difficult for a youngster to break into the club. So there's been that. So what have you made of the defence? Because it seems to be pretty solid that his preference would be Lustig, Sviatchenko, Simonovic, Tierney would be his first choice preference, with alternating with Lustig coming into a centre half role, and Boyata and Ambrose have disappeared.
Uh-huh.
So what's your thoughts on that?
I'm intrigued when he brings Lustig in as a habit play call with Touré, happily.
Are you surprised that Touré's disappeared?
Well, I saw a thing the other day saying they were thinking of offering him a coaching role. But, I mean, apart from three errors, the two against
Mönchengladbach,
and that first goal against Motherwell, I don't remember him doing anything that warranted banishment.
He was maybe brought in a coaching concept. You know, he was clubless and 35 years of age. I remember when he came in, Brendan was talking about how he was really impressed with his work rate and attitude in training when he was at Liverpool. And he maybe just thought, I just need an experienced guy to come into that training ground and show people the work ethic that I expect.
But he played well. When he actually played, he played well up until that Mönchengladbach game. But he was talking about him tonight, I think, about the qualities that he has as a guy. So I'd be quite happy if they gave him a job as a coach.
And your thoughts on Simonovic and Sviatchenko partnership?
I think it's a work in progress. I think they're both good players, but I still think they've got to work out. They're certainly not yet an iron curtain. They might in time become one.
Do you think that's an area that we should be strengthening, or are you happy with those two?
If you can get a better player, get a better player. But I don't know if they've got a better player than the money they're prepared to spend.
So,
I think both of them have got the facility to grow. I think Simonovic has got a lot of talent, and I think the other guy's got a lot of brains. And we'll play the way he's asked to play. But they make the odd error.
And then on in the middle of the park, how have you found in the middle of the park?
I find it interesting because I think that Ryan Christie has so much to offer. I think Rogic has so much to offer. And I must disagree again with Remy, our dear friend. I think that Callum McGregor has got much to offer. And you were talking to Mark last week about it, and I remember thinking you were talking that, you know, maybe next season we'll have a better class of player in that position. You won't remember the pre-Steen days.
No.
Well, I do. And there were guys there who were, by common consent, diddies, who won the European Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the right manager and the right chance to show their abilities, they developed into real players. And I still hope that this is, I think, where my wee bit of concern about Brendan comes in. It's not a concern, but my hope for Brendan is that he's open to giving these boys a chance. Because I think all of them have ability.
But you look at how much of a chance he's given to Stuart Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And how he, you know, when Rogic was not available for the Rangers game in the 31st,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't really a surprise that it was McGregor that came in.
No. But you were sort of suggesting that, well, we'll put up with him just now until something better comes along. I'm hoping that something better might be those guys who might grow.
I think McGregor's better than a lot of fans give him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And can have the occasional excellent ball, and his work rate is first class, I think. I'm just not sure that he's our solution. I think we should be looking at a better quality of player. I don't think
if they can get a better quality of a player that's within their budget, fair enough. But I wouldn't write these guys off, because I think certainly Rogic and the boy Christie, I think I've got talent, as Armstrong does. And he was talking tonight. He said that Mackay Stevens is not going out on loan.
I saw that. I don't want Mackay Stevens. I mean, again, people criticise, but I remember at the end of last season when people were bemoaning that Mackay Stevens was getting a game. And I remember saying, no, I know why Mackay Stevens is getting a game, because he will run at people and he might lose it, but he doesn't then go disappear. He keeps running at people. And a bit like Mark and I were talking about last week's podcast about Callum McGregor not really doing it this season, but Callum McGregor can score goals.
Yeah.
Mackay Stephen can score goals. He scored in limited play last season. I think it was 8-9 goals that he scored. And he really only played towards the end of the season. I can see why people would look at Mackay Stephen and say, there's a chance I could make something out of him. I'm not saying he will, but I can see why somebody would.
I agree. I'm not saying he will either. But he sees something in him. Because of the players he was talking about getting shot of, he was the winner.
But where does Christie fit into the team?
Well, I don't know yet. But I think Christie is a better all-round player in terms of the way the team functions in summer. There's games he's brought him on. I mean, see when you come into the games the way he does, you're bursting your guts, you're trying your best. You know, it's not a case of you're a regular pick so you can relax and play your game, as Armstrong is now beginning to do.
Yep.
He's beginning, and Rogic was beginning to see themselves as first-team players, at least the equal of Beaton, in terms of, you know, when they're getting picked, they're not in trial.
Yep.
But if Ryan Christie still thinks when he gets picked, he has to do more than everybody else. But I thought last year he was the best midfield player in Scotland.
Who?
Ryan Christie, when he was at Inverness Cali. And I was delighted when they bought him. I thought, that's a good buy. These are boys chock full of potential. But we'll see.
Do you know, I think his issue is he's not physically strong or big. He lacks physicality. In the modern game where people are expected to compete with the enhanced players that Guardiola produces.
It's curious you're saying that, because part of that discussion today that I referred to earlier when we were chatting before with John Collins on the big interview, he was talking about the great Arsenal team that recruited heavily from France.
Mm-hmm.
They had Petit and they had Thierry Henry, and they had who's the big guy?
Emmanuel Petit? No,
the other guy, the other big guy, who was the captain. He's now doing some job at Manchester City. Brilliant player, wonderful player. He was captain of France, was he not?
Anyway.
You know that guy? I mean, he's got a job at Manchester City.
Yes,
now.
Yes, I know who you mean. Yes, but I can't think of his name.
Oh, God, he's a world famous player. This is the thing.
We could get a job on Radio Clyde.
he was talking about the transformation between that group of players to the modern Barcelona and the David Villa, Aguero type of players. Small, neat, quick, good passes to the ball. Physically strong, but small. So he was saying the emphasis moving away from size and strength and speed to technique, speed.
But if you look at the English Premiership, and I'm not saying this is way to follow, I'm just saying if you look at the English Premiership, below the top six, they still recruit people based on who's the tallest, who's the fittest.
They do. That's why they're below the top six.
Yes. And the challenge is, and I accept, you know, the Barcelona principle of, well, none of the Barcelona players are, you know, Messi's not big. However, I think you need a high level of talent. A big, strong player will beat a small, skillful player if there's not that much talent difference between them.
I agree.
So that means if you're a small player to succeed, you need to be very talented.
But I don't think Christie, to go back to what we're talking about, is a small player. He may be light, but he's not diminutive. Forrest is diminutive. Patrick Roberts.
Well, talking of Forrest, what do you make of the transformation under Forrest? I mean, he was obviously going out the door under Ronnie Dyler.
I think that Forrest plays, he's an exciting player. But he was awful frustrating. He seemed to have lost his way completely. This season he's been much sharper, quicker, less prone to injuries. I think some of that was psychosomatic.
So do I. I think that was always Maloney's problem at Celtic.
Yes. There was someone, I think it was early in Ronnie's time, he commented the fact there's something to do with the way he ran. Mm-hmm. That he had to be always taught to run properly. I can't remember the exact details of it, but it was prone to cause the type of injuries he was getting. Also, as we've said before, I've talked to you before about the number of guys on Celtic TV who said he was the worst trainer. Which right. Obviously wouldn't help.
Uh-huh. And actually, I remember reading a thing to the opposite way. I mentioned Sean Maloney. I remember hearing that one of the criticisms that Celtic people had at Sean Maloney is he overtrained. So there's obviously a balance. What do you think's been the difference then that's made James Forrest the difference?
Well, obviously the manager's had his arm around his shoulder and talked to him and told him he's a good player and they can play and he'll get his chance. He's taken his chance. But he certainly looked as if he was on his way out the door. Now he's signed a new contract.
And Patrick Roberts, because I find that the transformation in the position of Roberts and Forrest, amazing. If you'd spoken to any Celtic fan in March, April, May, yeah, June, July, August, and talked about those two players, you'd have had people saying, well, Forrest can go for nothing.
They did say that.
And Patrick Roberts, we should break the bank to keep him.
Yes.
Would you break the bank to keep Patrick Roberts now?
No. I think Patrick Roberts does some sublime things, but he is lightweight. You know, he always seems to, I think you made the point, the game stops very often when it goes to Patrick Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas sometimes you just want to push it down the wing and run by the guy.
Yes.
But he always wants to come inside and try and score a sublime goal.
Uh-huh.
But he is a brilliant player. If you could get him to play at near enough his optimum every week, even within 90% of it, you would have a brilliant player in your hands.
Yeah, because the cutting inside, if you can get him to do the cutting inside, not always go for goal, and, you know, think of some of the times when his cutting inside, like Griffith scoring away in Europe,
The goal against Sevco in the last game, the winning goal.
Yes.
We came inside and released Armstrong. That was really brilliant football.
It was Armstrong's invisibility cloak that had the Rangers defence not even notice that he was running past him. That was that was amazing.
Yeah. That was a really good example of passing move.
Yeah, it was.
Past the two Roberts.
Yeah, but you would expect you would expect somebody to at least point and say, go with that guy. But nobody did. They were just fixated with the ball.
I think they were copying the Izaguirre approach to defending the first.
Exactly. So that leads me neatly on, because I'm just going through the main team to get your thoughts on the sort of Brendan's first 11. That leads me neatly on, because we've touched on Dembele, Griffiths' comment. Sinclair stroke Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
What's been your thoughts on what he's brought to the team?
I think he brings pace. I think he brings a degree of direct running that was missing from the team before. He's obviously got an eye for goal. There'll be one or two games where, you know, I've seen things saying he was a man of the match. I'm trying to think, where did that come from? You know, I didn't see him as man of the match. But he is a net contributor. To any doubt, he has made a difference. I was quite sceptical when they bought him because he wasn't even a game for Aston Villa. I know he was, but I'd never seen anything when he was playing for Aston Villa as remotely as exciting as we have seen him playing for the Celtic.
Do you know, I think the difference between someone like him and, say, Forrest or Roberts is, we just talked about Roberts, so the ball goes to Roberts. Three times the move breaks down, twice he does a sublime pass.
Mm-hmm.
But he's always trying to make himself available. Your point about Sinclair, and I remember speaking to someone at the beginning of the season who was saying, you know, it's fantastic and he scores goals and he gets himself in position. But there can be 15 minutes can go past in the game and you don't know where he is. And the difference is the ball goes to Roberts or Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
And they get it, they try to do something with it, and something happens or doesn't happen. But 10, 15 minutes can go by and the ball just doesn't seem to go to Sinclair. But whenever he does go to it, the move doesn't seem to break down. Something. Your point about a net contributor, something happens once he gets it. It's just he's not always getting it.
Mm-hmm. He's a dynamic player. The tempo of the game is lifted when he gets the ball in a position where he's able to do something positive. And he certainly can terrorise defenders with his pace. I'm trying to think, does he make a lot of goals?
I can't off the top of my head think of goals that I can say that he set up.
Yeah, he finishes. He's a great finisher.
Yeah. He almost is like, you know, Brendan often talks about, you know, people talk about the formation and systems are, you know, never get hung up on whether it's one up front or three up front. If we're scoring goals and looking attractive, what does it matter?
No.
But Brendan often talks about 4-3-3 when people have said we've played 4-2-3-1.
Uh-huh.
And if we are playing 4-3-3, then Sinclair really is a striker. He will probably score the same number of goals that Chris Sutton would score in a season.
Mm-hmm. But Chris Sutton made lots of goals. If you watch the videos of Larson's ransacking the leagues, the number of goals that Chris Sutton made with one touch, he was to my mind, of all the players I've seen, he was the ultimate two-touch, one-touch striker. He rarely took more than two touches, either to make the goal or score the goal. He was the most economical striker I've ever seen, Chris Sutton.
So, to get back to the current team, we've just been through the team. So,
you never mentioned Gamboa.
Ah, no, but I was going through his first choice 11, so if we then look at other people, so Gamboa, what's your thoughts been on Gamboa?
See, I think he's better going forward than Lustig is now, because I think Lustig, when he initially came, was very, very good at going forward. I remember European ties where he leapt up that wing and he delivered wonderful balls. I remember a goal at Hooper scored. Where was it? It was in Russia somewhere. I can't remember. A sublime ball into the middle. One touch from Hooper.
Moscow against Moscow.
Possibly, yeah. And he did that a lot. And I mean, even a couple of years ago, he was prone to score the odd goal. But he seems to be more liable to score a goal from a corner kick now than from genuinely racing up the right wing and doing the overlap thing. I don't think he does as much as he used to.
Which maybe just, I mean, he's 30 years of age now, so he's maybe just not as confident about being able to get back as quickly.
I wondered, was all those injuries a factor? That he didn't want to get injured by doing anything too, you know, not strenuous, but he was more a much more experienced, more economical player than he was. But then, I'm not. I don't mean that as a criticism. I just reflect that when you see Gamboa and the team's playing well, and they don't need to worry about him defending, he's actually very good going forward.
And if you look at the system that we've played a lot of the time in games where Tierney has played, that it's been a back four that changes to a three, mm-hmm. where Tierney goes up and Lustig still stays back into that three. Mm-hmm. Just something you touched on there. I remember one of my mates, who's a Rangers fan mate, bemoaning, particularly in the first two seasons of Martin O'Neill, that we never seemed to get any injuries and that people were fit to play every week. It's just something you mentioned there about Lustig, who got to the point where we were all thinking he was made of glass. Mm-hmm. And Forrest, who, even before Ronnie Dyla, was never getting that, could never seem to string more than four games in a row before, you know, is pretty much the Phil O'Donnell principle of four games in a row and you'd be out. And there's Forrest and Lustig and Simonovic, who'd hardly played. It's this parallels with Martin O'Neill can also be seen in players who had an injury issue previously are now playing every single week. Do you think that's just because we get better fitness things, or do you think sometimes players with injuries, it's down to their attitude?
I think it's a lot to do with their attitude. I mean, obviously people get injured, but if you think, I remember the only significant injury I remember Doug Leash getting in his whole career was a broken cheek, where he had to miss games. The only significant injury Henrik had, apart from the broken leg, was a similar injury where he mm-hmm. got bashed in the face. You know, they didn't get run-of-the-mill injuries because their whole attitude was one of positive, you know, positivity.
So we've gone through the team, the sort of main first choice players. So you said you're pretty much happy with Brendan. Is there anything you want him to improve upon?
Well, I think time will tell. His ambitions for the club, his stated ambitions for the club, are fairly lofty. Now, I really hope he achieves them. But can he do that in the environment that we're in? I don't know. I mean, as I said, I was impressed by the fact that they got 3 points in the Champions League. I felt they were unlucky. They were poor against Borussia at home. But having said that, they threw the goals away. If it hadn't been for their own errors, they'd have got a draw at Celtic Park as well. They threw the goals away, and they could have won in Germany. So there was obviously an improvement from that first debacle against Barcelona. And I also thought against Barcelona and Celtic Park, they didn't get the rub of the green. You know, if he equalises Dembele, it could have been a different game.
Well, but I mean, I've said before, I don't think we would have won in the new camp, but I don't think we would have lost 7 goals in the new camp if Dembele had scored the penalty there. And then the game at Celtic Park, header, if he'd scored that, well, they wouldn't have gone up the park and made it 2-0, so you're at one each and the whole dynamic of the atmosphere at Celtic Park changes.
The evidence of that was against Manchester City. They dominated Manchester City until Manchester City scored and the whole game changed. because Manchester City are left from the goal.
Yep.
So these goals do change games. My point is, you know, hopefully we will continue to dominate Scottish football and qualify for the Champions League. But when they get into the Champions League, is qualifying going to be enough? And it's even the last 16, or last 32, is it 32?
Last 16.
Is it 16, yeah.
Of the Champions League?
You qualify if you get through.
If you get through the group stages in the last 16.
16?
Yeah, if you don't, if you finish third, you go into the last 32 Europa League.
Right. Well, in the past, we've been delighted to qualify for the last 16. And a variety of circumstances have meant that we haven't gone further than that. Is that the wall that we kind of climb over? Now, if Brendan's vision of this team that he's laying before us, because he is,
mm-hmm.
much more than Martin ever did. Martin said, I will do everything I can in my power to bring success to the football club. And that was enough for us, because we've been starved of hope for a number of seasons. So that lifted us all. But Brendan has actually outlined almost like a programme of development. The end point seems to be not just qualifying, not just getting through the group stages, but going on to be a better team than that. But I don't know if we can do that in this environment that we're in.
Well, I know that he's been told that provided we are playing Champions League football, he doesn't have to sell a player.
But he will sell players because some of them will go.
Oh, he will sell players because part of the sales pitch of coming to Celtic is that we give you an opportunity to go into the riches of the English Premiership, and there's no way that we can compete. You know, it's one of the dilemmas when people have talked. And now, I know that West Ham made up a bid of £20 million for Dembele.
Did they really? Was that just paper talk?
No, they did. No, it was on their own website.
Was it?
Aye. They have a thing on their own website called The Insider, which is some... It's a concept that can't exist. The whole concept behind it is the sort of Sunday newspaper guy with the gossip, the anonymous guy with the gossip column in the Sunday newspaper about rumours that he's hearing. Well, you patently can't have that on the club's own website and pretend that the club know nothing about it and he knows nothing, you know... So they put on their website that West Ham, what they actually said was, West Ham have bid £20 million for a player in Scotland.
Was that what they said, right?
Yeah. So there is no player playing in Scotland worth that sort of money apart from Dembele.
Well, what about Barry Mackay?
Well, exactly. So, did you see one of the things that's sort of bugging me just now is the media wailing and gnashing in their teeth in general about all these fake news sites and social media and how damaging they are to the press. But then the press go and do things, and I'm using this as an example of the type of thing they do, because take it to the nth degree, it's the same. They do it all the time of... They don't say that they agree with somebody's opinion, but they just run what somebody's opinion is and just say, well, we never approved it or endorsed it. We just put it out there and let you know that this is what the guy was saying. So the blogger, and I only saw this because somebody retweeted it, the Rangers blogger who writes for the Daily Record has said, Tierney's a very good player, but Barry Mackay's the real star, young talent in Scottish football.
So?
I mean, that's just nonsense. Yeah. And then the Daily Record will then bemoan fake news sites and things like that. Well, if you're going to, you can't dance with the devil, you can't sell your soul to the devil and then complain when you get the consequences of it. And that's what they're doing. But anyway, so that's what they said. And I know that Celtic's attitude is that's half of the starting price that they would consider accepting for Dembele.
Well, that's good to know.
But the challenge for Celtic of that is, if somebody came along and offered us 40, 50 million pounds for Dembele, I think 99% of supporters would think we were nuts if we turned that down.
I would.
And his agent probably wouldn't let us anyway.
Plus, he could get injured.
But the dilemma for us is, how would we spend 50 million quid?
Because folk would know we had it.
Well, folk would know we had it. We can't then go out and buy a £20 million player, because a £20 million player is on 150 grand a week.
That's right.
Or 100 grand a week. Mm-hmm. Well, that blows, for a start, that then blows a big chunk of the rest of the 30 million quid you haven't spent. But it then means you've got one guy in the dressing room earning 5-6 times what everyone else is. So the challenge for us, even if we did sell a Dembele, would be, what do you do with that type of money?
Mm-hmm.
Do you go out and bank it?
Have we not got a hotel to build?
Well, I mean, but genuinely, do you actually just build it, chuck it 10 million, 20 million quid of the infrastructure of the stadium? Because even if you went out and bought four 10 million pound players, you're still, their wage bills are going to be on 80, 90 grand a week.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the moment, the wage bill is probably slightly askew because of the players he's brought in.
Well, I've been told that because of the way we've been behaving, and I don't mean this critically, Brendan's attitude, I think, has been, if you want to attract better quality players, it's the same. You're a golfer. I remember watching a documentary about how Tony Jacklin transformed the European Ryder Cup team. And one of the first things when they went, remember they played in America, before the 85 at the Belfry, they played in America and halved it.
Mm-hmm.
And he would only take the captaincy if the sweaters were made out of cashmere.
Aye.
They were all uniformed and they flew on Concorde.
Exactly. And he's top class.
And his attitude was, if you're going to tell these people they are the best of the best, you have to be treated like the best of the best in everything they do. And I think that Brendan's attitude. So we are taking private jets places when we didn't take private jets before. So I've been told, despite everything, we are budgeting for only break even this year, because the cost of everything's gone up.
That's what I thought. I did worry me, you know, that everybody was on the money they make from the Champions League, that they've invested money.
I believe he's been told, unless obviously provided we're in Champions League football, it's his decision if we sell a player or not. And obviously his decision will be tempered by a player saying, well, I only agreed to come here if I knew you would sell me if the right price came in.
Like Virgil?
Yes. So that, so his attitude is, well, provided I get sufficient, I get that money to invest in the team, I can keep us in Champions League football, so I don't need to sell players. And so he's taking the attitude of, he can build from a slightly stronger position by taking that attitude. And his goal is to have played the last eight of Champions League football within 5 years.
5 years is a stretch,
isn't it? It is, but if you think about it, if we were able to keep Dembele, and Dembele turns into the player that people are talking about him being, if we were able to keep Dembele for 2 years, so that we sell him when he's 23 or something like that, and we bring in another couple of players of the quality of Sinclair, would it be beyond the realms of possibility that we get last 16 and have a chance of last eight Champions League football?
Well, that brings you, see this guy they've brought in?
Yes.
Now, he's an unknown quality, as far as we're concerned, unknown quantity, as far as we're concerned. We don't know very much about him at all. But it would strike me that the problem you've outlined there about selling players on and having all that money and having to replace them, maybe he's trying to replace them now. I'm not saying that boy's a Dembele type, but if say you're going to sell a midfield player, so you bring in a younger midfield player that you actually think will be a better player than that. So maybe you should be hunting around for the next Dembele before they sell him.
Or bring maybe if your captain is, what, 31, 32?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Replace before you need to.
And this guy's 19?
Uh-huh. So maybe I know Dembele's very young, but maybe they, down the line, instead of saying, well, we sell Dembele for 30 million, 40 million, and we need to replace him with a similar player, maybe they should be looking to get that similar player in. Or if he's not already there in the youth academy.
So what areas of the team, we've got 2 weeks left in the transfer window, give or take. Would you like to see any more players in January?
I think people always like to see new players. I think it's, we've talked before about the transfer window. I think it's, we've come to the situation where we expect to buy players in the transfer window. The only reason I could see for buying a new player in this current transfer window would be that we could get a player who would actually enhance the team for next season and get him in now.
I thought it was interesting at the AGM, Brendan was asked about transfer windows and he said, you always like to get players in a transfer window because you, it's good to bring players in, fresh players in. But I didn't see the January transfer window as that important at Liverpool, but at Celtic, I see the January transfer window as more important than the summer transfer window.
Yes.
Because it's very rushed how early we start Champions League football. Now, I understand that's what his desire would be. The ability to actually get who you want in January might be more difficult.
That, I mean, that one that he signed, Ebuwe, he came right out of left field. So hopefully they've got one or two others. He said he was working on things and hoped to get a couple in before the end of the window.
Well, you talk about him coming out of left field. I understand Ebuwe, and nobody in the press knew or noticed, I understand Ebuwe was at the Ross County game on the 28th of December at Celtic Park. And I understand there was somebody else at that game as well.
Oh, but the American boy, did he give up on him?
I think Ebuwe's, they decided to sign Ebuwe instead.
Right.
But I understand there was some. There was another player was invited and was at the Ross County game on the 28th of December.
See, I thought the point in bringing that boy into the, was it Barcelona? When that boy came across,
yes,
from
there,
I thought it was to sell that, the whole.
Well, I think it was, and I think that succeeded because he's in the papers today saying, "Oh, I'd love it if Celtic came back in for me." But
that's paper talking. But
it is. I mean, for all we know, actually, we could have been interested in Ebuwe. He could have been stalling. And we could have brought the American and made a big deal of the American boy actually to try and encourage Ebuwe's agent to make a decision because, well, if you don't, we've got this guy lined up. It could have, you know, in view of how much Ebuwe came in under the radar, it does seem odd that we were so public about the American boy.
Mm-hmm. I like it when they surprise me. You know, I wasn't a great enthusiast for bringing in Robbie Keane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Roy Keane is an interesting one. I couldn't see the. I mean, I think we'd have won the league anyway without Roy Keane. But it was interesting to see that he actually did contribute to Ibrox.
Yeah.
He could dominate the game against them. And there've been other ones like that. You think, what was the logic in buying that guy? He had no future.
There are some.
The only one that disappointed me was the boy who came from Newcastle. Was it Newcastle? He played for Newcastle. He played for Liverpool. Bellamy.
Bellamy.
Because I really hoped they were going to sign him.
January's been an odd window for us. There have been players that have come in January that have never then got a game and gone away again. There are players where St Anthony occasionally will stick a picture up, you know, picture for bedtime. Do you recognise who this is? And you're looking at it thinking, no. But patently it's a guy who's played for us in the last 5 years and I don't recognise him at all. And then there was other things that this was in a Neil. Remember there was the Ronnie Gershon was his name? The Israeli centre-half who played one game under Lennon away in Inverness as a centre-half. And then never saw a head and a tail of him. Opposite of that was Stanislav Varga, who Martin signed him in the January transfer window, played one game. I think it might have also been away in Inverness. And then we kept him.
Yes. And there was the other one, like the other day, the boy from Tottenham. He played centre half in the Centenaries in the treble win.
Ran on Vega.
He was on the other day going on about what a wonderful club.
Yep.
If you ever get a chance to play for Celtic, you jump at it. I think you only stayed 6 months.
Yeah, but I do wonder whether... I wonder sometimes with things like that, whether it's one of these things that once he's gone, that's when he realised that he should have stayed.
Like so many of them.
Yeah.
Gary Hooper, for instance.
Yeah. What's happened to his career? Do you know, again, somebody stuck up on this day. We beat Hibs 2-1 at Easter Road, or 3-1, and it was Stokes and Hooper scored. Stokes scored a penalty and a sort of almost like a, not dissimilar to Carroll's goal for West Ham last week. And Gary Hooper scored a fantastic two-footed edge of the box, flicks it from one foot to the other, you know, one touch, right foot, left foot, bang, goal.
Was that the day that Paddy McCourt was playing and split the defence? He drew everybody to him and put Hooper through.
No.
There was a game at Easter Road where he drew them all to him like a moth to a flame and dissected them with one pass. You see, he's coaching now.
I did see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking through, I was just trying to look there to see about transfer windows for people that we've signed in January. And it's,
you know, by an Irish boy last year who's now from Derry or somewhere.
Ah, we did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the type of thing as well. There was not one, a couple of transfer windows where we signed a goalkeeper who never even came on the bench and then left again. There was a Swedish guy that we signed, and a couple of really odd transfer windows where we signed. Remember, there was a French guy that we signed whose name escapes me. He was a left winger.
Aye.
And he played a couple of games and looked good and said he wanted to stay, and we didn't sign him.
No.
Under Lennon. Yeah, we've had some really strange January transfer windows.
That's the Spanish boy. Remember, there was a boy come in. There was a boy, Miku. Was it Miku played against Barcelona?
I know, but Miku was in the summer.
But there was another boy come in, did you know, come in the winter transfer window. His name started with an L, I think.
Lassad.
He was a good player, but they let him go.
And then, was it not, did Brozak not, Thomas Brozak not?
I don't remember him.
Yeah, he was the Polish striker who played one game at Motherwell or something like that.
Rasmussen came in at the January transfer window.
Yeah, and...
And the big centre-half, whom I was listening to in the...
Højvelt.
Glasgow's Green podcast, and he was saying how he wasn't fit. He hadn't played for weeks and weeks, and they put him in the team and he got injured.
Yep.
And it still affects him to this day, he says, the injury. He was another one I thought that looked a good signing. The injury.
Well, he was part of the Southampton defence that got Southampton promoted out of the Championship into the Premiership.
But he said that he's carried that injury ever since. And he got it because Celtic made him play when he hadn't played for months. He came in straight for a closed season in Denmark or Norway or whatever it was.
That's right. So what's your thoughts on the way the rest of the season's going to pan out?
Well, I hope they win every game except the game against Aberdeen. See, part of me has this wicked thought that we could throw the games against Aberdeen and Hearts and still win the league.
It's that thing of you're now at the point where you just don't want us to lose any game.
No, I know that, but I also would like Aberdeen to finish second and Hearts to finish third.
Well, I do know that Hearts have prepped their lawyers if they miss out on Europe by one place and the new Rangers get it.
Because they don't have any coefficient?
No, because Rangers fail the FIFA fair play rules.
That's right.
And would only be granted a licence if the SFA gave them special dispensation.
And Budge is the very woman to deal with that.
Yeah, and also Aberdeen made a point when they released their half-year figures to say, and we would get a UEFA licence because we passed the financial fair play.
Good for me.
Criteria. So both of those clubs are keeping an eye on those things.
Do you remember a few years ago, that Celtic lost to Hearts, which stopped the Paris Vans qualifying or something? And I wrote an article for the website about it, seeing how I was the first time in my life I was rooting against a Celtic team.
Was that the season that Hearts finished second and Rangers finished third?
Yes, but we lost at Tynecastle, I think, and none of us were bought.
Because obviously we don't know what the last six fixtures are, so there could come a point where, I'm just trying to think, so we play Aberdeen and Hearts at Celtic Park in the next few weeks.
In a week of each other, right?
Yeah.
Games running.
So I don't think we've played Hearts at Celtic Park yet this season, have we?
No, but not.
So the first game of the season was at Tynecastle, so this one is at Celtic Park, which means we must be due to play in the last six. We must be due to play both Aberdeen and Hearts at Celtic Park.
Mm-hmm.
In the last six fixtures, because our first visits of the season were to Pittodrie and Tynecastle. Or was it Pittodrie first?
It was.
Yeah, we went to Pittodrie first and then Tynecastle first. So that means we must be due. So that would mean losing at Celtic Park to those teams.
No, I think we played at Celtic Park first.
Against Aberdeen?
Yes, and then we won with a Roygich goal.
That's right, we did. So that's it. So our last six, and we played Rangers at Celtic Park first. So our last six fixtures must include
an away game at Pittodrie.
Away at Pittodrie, home at Tynecastle, and away at Ibrox.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as you horse them twice.
Well, provided, and you know, we've now, as Remy pointed out on the Inferior podcast you mentioned, we've now played them at three different venues and beaten them each time.
Yes. I think that's something I think I would like them to just continue to beat them.
Yep.
Don't give them any encouragement.
Do you think the winter break will have impacted on the teams in the SPL?
Well, I think, if I remember, it was the last season, the season before Ross County were bottom of the league. Then after the winter break, they went on a run and saved themselves. So I think most of the managers will look at it the way Brendan looks at it and think, this is a chance to work on the training pitch with the players and get them to buy into my ideas. I hope that's what the boy at Hearts is doing, because I hope he does quite well. So it's hard to know. I'm not as despondent about the Scottish league as many people are. I think the presentation's crap.
Well, absolutely. I think the presentation and the salesmanship's crap. Yes. But I actually think, you know, as I remember, you know, there was the Diddy, Stuart Gilmore was on the Rangers fan who used to own St Mirren was on Sports Sound yesterday, and I listened to the podcast today. He was like a team that can't string three passes together. He had an inability to string more than three sentences together where his argument didn't contradict itself. Mm-hmm. And he was just a stream of diddiness in it. But the one point that was valid was they were talking, one point that was valid was they were talking about the lack of promotion of Scottish football. And what I don't understand is there should be a budget levied, or they should cream out money from the TV revenue before it goes to the clubs, which goes to a centralised marketing budget. So the clubs can promote themselves, but there's a centralised marketing budget to promote the league itself.
You're saying that, he's saying that.
No, I'm saying that. I'm saying there should be, you know, they talked about the lack of marketing, and that's what I would do. I would have, if the TV, whatever the TV budget is, I would retain an amount of that didn't go out to the clubs, that stayed centrally to be spent throughout the course of the year on bill posters, radio, TV, social media, on a proper reviewed budget to keep the vibrancy of the game up. But the guy, Stuart Gilmore, was bemoaning, saying Scottish football needs a strong Rangers and Celtic. I always am suspicious of someone. In anything in life, you mention things in alphabetical order.
I agree with you.
So anybody who defaults to Rangers and Celtic is a Hun.
Exactly. I agree. I've always thought that. As soon as somebody says that, I'll say to Irene, he's a Hun.
Yeah. Because he must be. Because in anything in life, you put things in alphabetical order. It's a natural thing you do. It's just that you wouldn't even think about doing it. It's natural that you would say Celtic and Rangers. You would say Aberdeen, Celtic and Rangers. Aberdeen, Celtic, Hearts and Rangers. Because that's alphabetical.
How insulting is it to Aberdeen and Hearts and teams like that who are doing pretty well within their own resources to just dismiss them?
But
and promote a club that can't even budget properly.
But when Richard Gordon was on our podcast, one of the things I remember Richard Gordon talking about was, it makes no difference whether it's a two horse league or a one horse league. If you're not one of the one or two horses, what difference does it make?
Correct.
But actually, it makes a marginal difference for it to be a one horse race. Because if it's a one horse race, that one horse is less likely to win every single competition.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a two horse race, the two of them will clean up.
We said that when they went bust, and it was Armageddon. We talked about it, and we made the point. You're not allowed to beat them twice. If you know what I mean, the idea that they used to play Celtic, then they'd play Hearts, Johnson, then they'd play Rangers, the old Rangers.
Yeah.
But now they play Celtic, and it can be 10 weeks or 8 weeks before they play Celtic again. So they can go on a winning run.
Yeah, and build momentum, which is what Aberdeen have done in the last couple of seasons. That's why Aberdeen were able to challenge.
That's correct.
Instead of getting beaten every fourth game.
Uh-huh. I agree with that. You don't need two big crocodiles. One's enough.
And if you then park us, because everybody knows we've won the league, actually it's quite interesting. It looked like Rangers were slightly pulling ahead because Aberdeen and Hearts were losing games. The Rangers' defeat to us in the draw with St Johnson takes 5 points off them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the challenge is, our next set of games are Albion Rovers in the Cup, St Johnson in the League, Hearts in the League, Aberdeen in the League.
Yes.
So in our next four games, one's away in the Cup, three are league games, three are at home, and we play Aberdeen and Hearts. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest reason why the new Rangers might get to be able to push away a wee bit into second place.
That's assuming they win their games.
Because, yes, but we are playing...
We are playing their major rivals.
Yeah, St Johnson, Hearts and Aberdeen are the three teams who can displace them from second place.
Mm-hmm.
And we are playing each of them at Celtic Park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's no... So, that's the... But the league itself, I think, I agree with you. You take us out and that's an exciting league.
Well, when they went bust and they won the Inter League, I could happily live without them.
Yep.
They did. I used to watch all of sports scene, much as I don't like the presentation, I don't like Chris Brogan. I'd watch the games, I'd tape it, watch the games, I'd pass forward through the analysis. And I enjoyed watching the highlights of all the games. Now I've got to fast forward through one of the games because I don't watch them at all. I enjoy watching the other teams play. I like to see Inverness, Cali, Thistle. I like to see Hearts. I know they're not popular amongst the Celtic support, but there's always a dynamic atmosphere at their ground. You know, I quite like watching the Scottish League. It's certainly better than some of the English games that you see.
The presentation of that
is much better.
English football can be dull, dull, dull. So, I mentioned those four games. So we've got the four games coming up. What do you see coming in those four games? We've got Albion Rovers on a plastic pitch against Airdrie's plastic pitch, and then St Johnson, Hearts, Aberdeen. What's going to be the outcome of those four games?
Well, I hope they win them. I hope they win them all. I was curious about the Albion Rovers win, not because I think Albion Rovers are going to beat them, but do you remember when they signed Roy Keane, and I think their first game back was against Clyde?
Yep.
And we thought, we're on our way to the treble here. And... they get gupped.
Yeah, Clyde deserved to win comfortably. We had, not only did Roy Keane, we had one other player making his debut that day.
Do we?
Yeah.
I have never felt sorrier for any player in my whole life. He had been doing really, really well in the reserves. And this was his chance. And they played, and they took cold feet and didn't sign him. They asked, could they have an extended loan? And his whole club said no. He'd already been away long enough.
What's the score going to be for Albion Rovers before we go?
I always have it 4-0. If they're going to win, I hope they win comfortably. I hated doing something that in East Kilbride game last year, but in the Stranraer game the year before, they struggled to a 1-0 or something. Yeah. It was grim watching.
It was last year. It was and Carlton's Cole scored against Stranraer.
Well, so was. If it's going to be in the telly, let's have a show.
Okay, and who's going to score?
I don't know. Well, I suppose it depends who's playing. If Griffiths is playing, he will score. If Dembele's playing, he'll probably score. Sinclair will probably score. Anybody can score.
Okay, well, with that, I will say, Blackie Moore, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have you thought of the world wherever you be? Welcome to Cosmic University, where life is the journey and love is the trip, and the study of them will make you hear. I'm professor of the rap, and when I speak, I guarantee that my lines will not be weak. They say a mind is a terrible thing to waste. That's why I'm here and on the case, wrapping up every mind with a special degree in sociopsychology, PE. The Gary Bird Experience is my course. When you take my class, you will feel the force, because I know the roots that the rap is from. When I speak to you, I'm not done. Hear my rap and begin to dance, and I promise you this, you will advance. You may have seen the Raiders from the Lost Ark, but you still left the theater in the dark. So clap your hands to the beat as the wonder sound, and the GBE shine on the ground.
I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast with young Mr. Lackey Moore, and are pleased, like me, that he's seen the light for the blessed Brendan, and we are raring to go for a Rodgers-inspired treble of this season. We've got the Albion Rovers game coming up, and then the key league games. Celtic FC Foundation are announcing some events in conjunction with the club for the Lisbon 57th anniversary. There will be some stuff in Glasgow around the 25th, I have no doubt. And I think they also announced an event in London this week. There is quite a lot going on there, and enough of me. There may or may not be another signing by the time we get the next podcast out. Hopefully there will, because it's always nice to perk things up. But I will say, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Thanks very much for downloading and listening all the times that you do. If you ever want to get in touch about anything, be a guest, write something for the site, it's podcasts@celticunderground.net. That podcasts, plural, at celticunderground.net. Send us something in, rate us on iTunes, drop us a message on Twitter, at Harry Brady CU, at Lackey Moore 1, at Celtic Rumours, at St Anthony, or I think it's Celtics, it's not at St Anthony, it's not, that's nonsense. It's at Stephen4_2, after he dropped his catchy Beverly Hills 510910, whatever it was. Twitter, this whole boy. There's many others. It's at Mark Cooper, Marco Cooper, many others of us on the interweb and various other places. Anyway, I've rambled on. Hope you enjoy James Brown and the Gary Bird Experience. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Sounds like a mystery. I'm a talking about our story. It can make I can eat on to you. It can make Nefertiti thanking you. With the crown, you will begin to glow. When it's secret, you begin to know. Next time you feel like you're in a rut, go see the mighty kingdom of King Tut. It will blow your mind, no doubt it's true. Guess what? King Tut looks just like you. You were Cleopatra, queen of the night. The sun would wink when it saw you smile. You were the Hannibal of the history book. And the earth would tremble at your very look. You were the builders of the pyramids. You are the face up on the Sphinx. You rode on the Nile in grace and style. Look at yourself today and think. See the hieroglyphics up on the wall. Like the dancers on the floor, they will not fall. If you take one look, it will astound. And then you will see who wears the crown. Wear the crown.
people in them, how we fought for freedom, all about the many things we have until the world contributed. You are the crowd.
The story of the Ku Klux Klan. The crown will appear in the GBE, but it's never seen on your TV. It's in a black and a white in your gold mine. A picture so old it defies time. Alex Haley drew it in his book. Swung Gunter kept in his other foot. Ghana, Song Kai, and O'Malley. They are the roots of your own family tree. Kingdom so vast and knowledge wise, they remove cataracts from human eyes. And yet today some refuse to see and live in fear of their discovery. Not in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean true. But years before in Alcaboo, a ship set sail with a chocolate crew. 2,000 years before Columbo came, the Olmecs built tributes to their fame. Stonehead with faces 8 feet high, that the Hulk could not lift to his thigh. Though the facts historians avoid, first to arrive was the Africord. It may shock the house and shock me too. And if you're not prepared, it may shock you. While some had doubts that the world was round, in America, guess who wore the crown? Crown you will not need to smoke, to cough, to dust, or speed. With the crown you can become the high, and you will make it if you try. But don't you ever forget what it will take to wear the crown you cannot fake. If you're gonna lead, you got to be a king and give the world your everything. Or be a man like Malcolm X and demand for all the very best. Or conduct a railroad like Harriet. We all owe her a lifetime debt. If you're gonna fight, don't do it free. Make them pay to see, just like Ali. Or sing like Ella and make them guess, is it you or is it Memorex? If you play a sport, become number one, like Joe Louis, Andy Robinson. Make Dr. J your shining star. Shoot like Magic, dunk with Jabbar. Or if you can write, then write some books, like Langston Hughes or Armis Brooks. If you think you're smart, don't deceive us. Be an Imhotep, be a genius. And don't let anybody confuse the fact, you don't wear the crown just because you're black. Everybody in the world has a crown in place. It becomes their culture and their face. And so it is, we will not deny our history or by the line. We have no clue.